Petersfield's Shine Radio.
Shine Radio's Growing Together is sponsored by DeMello & Company. Financial advice for you, your family and your future.
Hello and welcome to Growing Together, the gardening podcast from Petersfield Shine Radio. I am up here at the Adhurst Estate Allotment and joined today by both Coxie and Anne. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, and to have Anne with us.
I know, we are honoured, aren't we? She's a bit of a social butterfly and getting her tied down to a Sunday morning is a big ask. So thank you for joining us, Anne.
I can safely say I actually don't do anything on a Sunday apart from hopefully come here.
Exactly. So there we go. Well, you're very welcome. So on today's programme, we are going to be talking about the BBC Garden Spring Fair down at Bewley, as we did the draw yesterday. And also we are talking to Matt Marriott, renowned local tree surgeon, all about the heavily pollarded horse chestnut tree in Sheep Village. And apart from that, we are going to talk about what we've been up to at the allotment over the last couple of weeks. Coxie, what's going on?
So I've been putting in some more broad beans. Having lost them, as you know.
The mice. What have you done to protect them from the mice this time?
Am I allowed to say so?
Have you surrounded them with traps?
Yes.
Good work. A ring of defence around the broad beans this time round.
Very much so. Good. But it's a bit late, to be honest, to be putting in... Yeah,
well, beans. As you know, Harriet and I are doing this plant sale on the 4th of May, and you'll be pleased to know there's some broad beans there, and they're up.
Ooh. They're up?
They're up.
So I get a discount?
Yes, you do.
It's for charity.
Oh, sorry. I forgot that part.
We'll do you a good deal.
Yeah, one of your good deals. Yeah. Yes.
£2 each or three for a tenner.
Oh, brilliant. Fantastic. Yes. Good.
Yeah, so broad beans, what else? I mean, your greenhouse is looking like it's bursting at the seams.
It's doing well now. And I think it's more a case of we've had a bit of heat over the last week or so.
Yeah.
And therefore, that's helped bring the seeds on a lot quicker than they had been doing so maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. So that's very promising. I've got all types of things in there in terms of even my runner beans now starting to come through.
Brilliant.
So I'll be looking to put those into the ground probably in about 2 or 3 weeks' time.
Yeah.
I've got French beans now actually coming through. So I'll be getting them into the ground.
What variety of French beans are you growing? Are you growing climbers or dwarf ones this time?
So I've got a mixture. I've got some climbers, which I don't tend to use, but I'm trying out this year. But I have got the dwarf ones, which have always been extremely good.
Yeah, I've switched from the dwarf French beans. I don't know, I've just not had a great deal of love for them over the last couple of years, so I've switched back to a climbing French bean. And I'm growing Cobra this year.
Cobra,
yeah. Pretty reliable, nice straight pods. Hopefully they'll look okay on the show bench.
But they're not the purple variety.
No, I don't like those. Traditional green for me.
I think we might be doing some beans as well. I think we are going to do little dwarf beans and then the runner beans as
well. Little dwarf beans or dwarf plants?
They're slightly different.
Not sure about that one. Am I look on my list of what I'm growing?
And you've
you know
not
I'm
got...
a newbie. You
we know you're a newbie, Anne, absolutely. You've not got a greenhouse, have you, Anne?
No.
So what are you growing and where are you growing stuff?
So I'm growing some flowers and my sister, who's the fellow allotment here with me, we've got some pak choy going. I think we've got some of the beans. And
either miniature beans or dwarf beans. We're not sure which.
Yes, I will update you on those.
Okay.
She's doing quite well. She's got one of those little plastic-covered greenhouses.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
so she's got some stuff in there.
A bit like that one there.
Yes, exactly the same as that. So she's doing pretty well, and she's got some things going. I've had a little bit of a disaster with my flowers.
Oh, no. What's happened?
And my sweet corn. So I was going to say, do you remember the rain? But obviously there's been quite a lot of it. But
haven't we had some rain?
I think it was the Easter section of rain.
Okay.
And I was told to put out my plants to harden them up. So I was following instructions, popped them outside, got COVID, and they were outside for 4 days because I was too weak to go and get them.
Oh, no.
And at that point, it rained like I've never seen before. And I think they might be going a bit... I don't know. My sweet corn have all fallen over.
Sweet corn.
I know.
Is
so I'm going to plant it again. But now you were just saying, I mean, they took me 4 weeks to get to this size. So.
Do you know what? I think if you replant sweet corn now, I think
I might
you'll be
lucky,
all right.
Mightn't
but
I?
In my experience, I don't know about you, Coxie, but in my experience, sweet corn does everything it possibly can till it's about a foot high to die.
I was very proud of them because they were doing really, really well. And then they've just collapsed.
A bit early, to be honest with you.
Sweet, do you think a bit early? I've got time then. That's good. So because we weren't trying to get a crop of it. We were trying to do it as a bit of an experiment because we're learning.
Yep.
And we thought, well, we'll just give everything a bit of a go, really. And so even if we only have about six plants, and have enough for a barbecue at our lovely allotment, that would be wonderful. Is that, that's our thinking.
Well, remember when you plant the sweet corn in its final place, remember to plant it in a block rather than a row because it pollinates itself.
So I tend to go for a square.
Yeah, perfect. Absolutely. Good square. Plant them about 8 to 12 inches apart. Probably more towards the sort of 12 inches apart.
I don't think I've got that much space.
But you need to plant it in a block. There's no good planting sweet corn in a row because it pollinates itself with the tassels that it grows. The pollen falls down, pollinates the flowers, and hence having to grow it in a block.
I'm feeling lucky. I just want 6 plants. That would be good.
Six. Nine. Oh. 9 would be better.
Oh, so yes.
I think about a block.
I thought a square was 4.
Well, we could go with 9.
9?
Nine works in a nice block.
Okay, 9 sounds quite a lot. I'm going to aspire to that.
Give it a go. Give it a go.
But talking about sweet corn, yep. Something you need to think about now is getting some empty squash bottles.
Oh, absolutely. Or tonic bottles. You look like a gin lover, Anne.
No comment.
Plastic tonic bottles.
Oh.
Cut the bottoms off them.
Yes.
Yep. And take the lids off.
Yes.
And then when the sweet corn is almost ready,
right,
slide the tonic bottles over the top of the corn.
Is that for birds? Oh.
Mice and rats.
Oh. Even squirrels.
Squirrels, mice, rats. Again, so sweet corn, again, it's a pain to start growing, and then when it's nearly ready, nature knows when it's ready because all the animals come and eat it.
Right, I'm not going to give up on this, but it does sound like the odds are against me.
But do you know what? It's one of the most rewarding veg.
On the barbie. Oh, it's just
When I have my one piece of sweet corn, I'll invite you guys round
Fantastic.
For the barbecue.
We'll split it three ways. It is only, in my opinion, only second to a fresh asparagus.
Oh, yum.
Cut, cooked, eaten. You don't need butter. It's just so juicy. It all dribbles down your face. Oh. It's fantastic.
Well, definitely, it's going to be worth the 3 months to get to this stage.
Definitely. Definitely not a first date vegetable to try, but absolutely worth it. It's fantastic.
I was hearing you were mentioning mice.
Yes.
We've been eaten by something. We first of all thought it might have been deer. You've only got my garlic and my shallots. They've eaten my shallots.
You know, there's quite a bit of difference between a mouse and a deer.
No, but actually we now think it's a snail because we've seen a little trail. Because we were trying to work out what's eaten them. We think it's snails.
We do have deer here.
Yes.
And they do like to nibble the tops of onions.
Do they like onions?
Yeah, they will. They'll take their little tops off.
So maybe it's a deer and a snail.
It could be deer, snail and a mouse. Who knows?
What about a slug?
It could even be a slug.
It could even be a slug.
How do you know the trail wasn't a slug trail?
I actually hate slugs so much.
Do you?
Yeah, they make me feel slightly queasy.
Welcome.
Actually, my sister's seen a mouse as well on our patch.
Welcome to allotmenting, Anne.
Yeah.
Yeah, all these beasties are set to try us.
I do feel like there's a whole thing against us at the moment. All I want to do is grow 5 onions, 5 shallots.
5 onions, 5 shallots, and 9 sweet corn plants.
Oh, dear, honestly.
Well, Anne, you are a resident of Sheet.
Yes.
The tree on the village green
had
quite a haircut earlier in the year, didn't it?
It was very, very sad. And in fact, I can remember watching it on the day with this amazing crane that came with...
They had a cherry picker.
Yes, yeah. And then it had the bit that chopped at the end. It was absolutely
it was
amazing to watch. In actual fact, it was such a big deal for Sheet. Everyone just came around and everyone's just standing watching it. And somebody videoed it as well with the minute by minute and sped it up, which was amazing.
I caught up with Matt Marriott a couple of weeks ago underneath the tree.
Yeah.
Matt is a well-known tree surgeon in the local area, and you know what he doesn't know about trees isn't worth knowing, so I caught up with him to understand why they did what they did. Let's hear from Matt now. So I'm joined on the village green in Sheet, the site of what used to be a most magnificent horse chestnut tree, and I'm joined by Matt Marriott, 30 years served tree surgeon and now practicing tree consultant. Matt, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Steve.
How are you?
Very well.
Good. The rain is just about holding off for us, isn't it?
Just about, but that's fine. Guys like you and I,
we can tough it out, can't we? Exactly, exactly. Yeah. You've got a bit more hair than me to protect you, but it is covered under a magnificent-looking hat at the moment, so that's all good. Matt, we're sat here under, as I said, what used to be a magnificent horse chestnut tree, which, during the winter, got a bit of a drastic haircut. And I, for one who pass here almost daily, was a bit shocked. What happened?
Yeah, it did prove to be quite a shock to a lot of people, and it upset a lot of people as well, as, you know, trees are really contentious. People warm to them, even though they don't realise. There will be people who drove past this tree, have lived beside this tree for many, many decades, and only when tree surgeons intervene and carry out what appears to be a drastic pollard, do people realise what how significant this tree was in their lives and what a loss it is now?
Absolutely. I mean, it, quite a drastic haircut, definitely. I mean, you said pollarding, but what was the reason for it?
So I've been watching, monitoring this tree for probably about a decade because I, like you, I live in this area. And this tree has always fascinated me because I've noticed defects on this tree that most people wouldn't have noticed, and three of those defects are two species of decay fungi and quite a alarming anatomical feature on it. So the fungi that are infecting a tree, one is called Phytophthora, which is a waterborne pathogen, and the other is Ganoderma aplanatum. Forgive the Latin name, most fungus don't have English names.
So right, okay. Do they have a more common name?
It's the presence of the Ganoderma aplanatum that has really caused a problem for this tree. It's not a very common type of fungus to have on this tree. There's a different variety, the Ganoderma australis, which is far more common on the horse chestnut. But it was the presence of this less common fungi that was interesting.
Okay. And is it, you know, the presence of a fungi in a tree, is that always fatal or can it be managed?
No, not at all. I mean, fungus come in all different shapes and sizes. In fact, there's fungus are a very, very important part of a tree's life from when they erupt as a seed.
Yes.
So there is no such thing as a plant that doesn't have some kind of hyphae of fungi running through
it. Right, okay.
It's a very important symbiotic relationship that the two have.
Okay.
However, there are some fungi which are problematic. They're classified as parasitic fungi.
Okay. And is that what this is?
This is a parasitic fungi.
Okay.
Yes. And it specifically affects the root and the butt.
So right, okay.
We break fungi down into ones that affect the root and the bark, the branches and the leaves.
Okay.
And this one affects the roots and the buttress of the tree. So sort of the lowest from ground level to 2 to 3 metres up the stem.
And being a bit of a novice in the tree world, the lower down, is that more problematic? More things we should look out for?
It's certainly a really good place to start. Not all problematic fungi are at the base of the tree.
Okay.
It's a good indicator that if you've got big fungal brackets at the base of a tree, that there is a problem with
the tree.
It's not necessarily fatal.
When you say fungal brackets, is that what we're looking at here?
These fans
that sort of sticking out from the bark.
That's right. Yes,
yeah.
And they put on layers each year. So if you
okay.
if you do see a fungal bracket, it's worth studying it and looking at the layers. And the newest, freshest layer will be soft and sometimes colourful.
Okay.
And then as they are older, they fade and get very hard.
Okay.
So yes, the presence of a bracket and how many tears there are on the bracket are important factors, as well as identifying what the bracket
what it is.
Because that will tell you what mycelium is going on inside.
And I suppose if you're in any doubt, get a specialist like yourself in.
Get someone in who knows what they're doing.
Exactly.
Is always a good call, because it's not simply the presence of the fungi we're looking at. We're looking at, there's generally five things that we'll look at. We use a platform or a system called Valid to when we're looking at a tree, and that, so the V is vitality, and then anatomy, load, identity and defect.
Okay.
So the vitality, we're looking at the crown density, any wound wood and response growth, and then the anatomy, like I said, we've got an anatomical problem with this tree.
Yeah, you said that earlier. I was going to come on to that, but now you've mentioned it now. I know we're halfway through Valid, but what was wrong with the anatomy of the tree?
So it's got a there's a vertical crack running down this tree.
Okay.
Which is essentially dissecting the tree into probably about 2/3 and 1/3.
Right.
And so that's the third problem that's being created. We've got the presence of two fungi. And then we've got this anatomical feature, which is a weakness.
Yeah.
Now, that could have been caused by any number of things. On a broad tree like this, it's most likely caused by the wind twisting the stem.
Gotcha.
And then causing this cleft down the stem. And it's not an uncommon feature to see in trees.
No.
But in a tree that is this broad with the crack so low down on the tree, and in an area of such high public access.
Of course, they're right outside the pub here, aren't we?
And we've got 2 footpaths, and there's a
the village hall. Well, there's everything
down the road.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a church over there, a village hall. Yeah,
it's an idyllic setting, really, isn't it?
And a bench that we're sat on, right beneath the tree.
So, but we're a lot safer now.
We are a lot safer now. Yeah, and so I'm aware that you were asking me about pollarding. So let's get back to the fact that this tree was pollarded. And in fact, we can actually go back a bit further than that, because there's a bit more history to this tree than just the pollarding that happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it earlier? No, it was late last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, sort of winter before Christmas, wasn't it?
Just before Christmas. So if we wind back a couple of years, so this tree has a TPO on it, which is a tree preservation order, which means that no work can be carried out to this tree without consent from the arboricultural officer in the council.
Yep.
And that's a good thing. It means that no branches can be cut off it, no work can be carried out without someone knowledgeable giving their agreement to it and opening up some kind of discussion between the owner of the tree and the tree officer at the council.
Yeah.
And so permission was granted a couple of years ago to give the tree a reduction, which is essentially taking the overall size of the crown and reducing it by an agreed amount.
Yep.
So we used to work on percentages. We don't do that anymore. But for example, this tree, they took off about 10% of the overall crown.
Okay. Which doesn't sound like much.
It's not a lot. It's fine if the tree is healthy,
yes,
and doesn't need a reduction in some of the lateral weight on the branches.
Yeah, yeah.
But even back then, this tree wasn't healthy. The signs that we can see right now were very present and visible back then.
Right, okay.
And so a solution would have been to carry out, say, a 50% reduction of the crown.
Right, okay.
So not nearly as significant as what we're sat beneath at the moment.
No.
But somewhere in between.
Okay.
So the idea of that is you are actually alleviating quite a lot of the weight of the crown.
Yeah.
You're reducing what we call the sail area. So
you said about the twisting and the branches and the wind, maybe, so you're reducing that by 50%. That's going to have a hell of an impact on the tree, isn't it, and the movement of the tree.
Yeah, we refer to that as lever arm strategy, and how the constant force and changing force of the wind and loading on a tree will be minimized if you do reduce it down by a significant amount. Now, unfortunately, that reduction wasn't effective enough to overcome the crack that's in the stem, that feature, and over time the increasing load out on that side, which was pretty significant, there's a very low vertical limb on that side of the tree, just caused it to open up. It didn't fall, but it did open up significantly to the point where it was causing alarm.
Because let's be honest, the size of the limbs on this tree are enormous, aren't they?
Oh, they are. Yeah, I mean, they're the size of what most people would consider a reasonable sized tree.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's right. So, you know, the stem itself, we're talking a good, holy almost 6 feet in diameter, certainly five and a half feet in diameter. So it's a very broad tree for one that is about 160 years ago, I think, wasn't it? So at the point where the tree was beginning to fail, it was propped up and strapped at that point to prevent any further movement, albeit that's only a very temporary measure.
Yeah, yeah.
The council straight away put a fell order on it and said that it needed to come down.
Right, okay.
That was obviously a really unpopular decision with both the parish council and any locals who were aware of what was going on. And so the decision was made to just carry out this pollard that we see now, which actually has had the effect of taking all of the weight out of the tree.
So literally all of the weight.
The chance of it collapsing is, I mean, it's not zero because it never is.
But no.
It's vastly
fairly minimal.
Reduced.
Yeah.
The problem that we're relying on now, because all of the branches have been taken off and therefore the ability for the tree to, in spring, to produce leaf and therefore chlorophyll so that it can begin photosynthesizing, is that the tree has to produce that itself from dormant butts.
Right.
So under the bark that we can't see are many, many dormant buds that need to activate.
Okay.
In order to provide the chlorophyll to allow the tree to start feeding this year. And without that, the tree won't survive. So it is a bit of a balancing act between the tree, A, having the vitality to throw out all of that growth, and B, there being enough for it to photosynthesize early enough in the year.
So this was, I wouldn't say a happy compromise, but a compromise to try and save the tree then, rather than felling it.
Yeah, that's right. It was without a doubt, it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And
it's a shame the right thing wasn't done a number of years ago.
So it was, but the suggestion that I made about a 50% reduction is actually quite a contentious one, and we'll come on to that in a moment. I think with trees like this, if it's longevity that we're after, then your only long-term management solution is to pollard it.
Right.
So we have an amazing catalogue of ancient and veteran trees in this country.
Mm.
But more than the rest of the world put together.
Right, okay.
We really have a very amazing history of woodland pasture management. A very strong method of management that we used in this country was pollarding.
Right, okay.
And so that was human intervention in pollarding.
Yes.
But it doesn't have to be human intervention because trees will naturally pollard themselves.
Okay.
So a very old tree will begin to die back from the tips, and you'll commonly see trees like this where we describe them as having stag's heads at the top, and it looks like this.
Yeah, I've seen that, yeah.
Numerous.
You see it quite a lot in oak trees, don't you?
Awful lot in oak
trees. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, that's right. And in limes as well, and where it does look like there are antlers poking out the top of the tree.
Yeah.
And that's because the tree is naturally in decline. Now, it might be because it's just of a certain age, or it might be because there's been damage to the roots, or it's been damaged by the wind, or there could be secondary factors as well. It could be the presence of fungi.
But it's nature's way of trying to re-establish itself.
Yeah, so yeah. Actually what happens is quite wonderful, is the whole upper canopy dies back, and it allows a lot of light into the lower canopy that wouldn't otherwise be there. And that activates what we call epicormic growth, which is these dormant buds being activated and forming a new crown lower down in the tree. So if you look at a very old oak tree in the middle of a field, for example,
yes,
if you look closely at it, you'll see that the size of the crown doesn't necessarily fit with the size of the stem.
You could see that
once upon a time it was a much taller, broader tree.
Yeah, yeah.
And the fact that it now has quite a stunted growth and a small crown means that the tree has used this, what we call retrenchment method, to give itself longevity.
Yeah.
So coming back to ancient and veteran trees, so the definition of a veteran tree is one that is more about features and gnarls and cracks and cavities.
What, than just age?
Than just age,
okay.
That's right, yeah. So any age tree can be a veteran tree,
okay.
But only very old trees can be ancient trees.
Right.
However,
okay.
All ancient trees are veteran trees.
Blimey, follow this.
Which is why we have ancient and veteran trees.
Gotcha.
Because
an ancient
tree is also a veteran tree.
Right, okay.
Now, the interesting thing here...
And what was this classified
no,
as? Okay.
Neither.
Ancient or veteran?
I don't think this was either ancient or veteran. It was a heritage tree.
Yes.
So it had as I say, it was planted to commemorate something with Queen Victoria
going back
150, 160 years.
Yeah.
And so it has, you know, the heritage, and it's been very much part of this village.
Certainly
as long as everyone alive can.
Yeah.
And going back to ancient trees, the interesting thing about ancient trees is, without exception, every single ancient tree is a pollard.
Right, okay.
And that's important to remember, because if trees haven't been pollarded, either by man or naturally, i.e. retrenched,
yes,
they will not live
as
long as a tree that has been pollarded.
Okay.
Because they will tear out, and once they tear out, they're very prone to fungi invasion or fungi activation, which is what we now think. And therefore, the decay process is sped up greatly because of the presence of these fungi. Whereas, you know, we have trees that are, well, we believe that we've got a lime tree that's about 2,000 years old, which without coppicing or pollarding would not be the case.
2,000 years old?
Yeah, about 2,000 years old.
Good grief. Where's that?
It's at Westonbirt.
Blimey. Okay.
And it's unrecognisable as a single tree, but you've got this enormous ring of coppice growth that all shares the same DNA.
Right, okay. Yeah, yeah.
But I say, in the UK, we're lucky enough to have countless examples of amazing pollarded trees that just look squat and gnarly and full of cavities and cracks, and sometimes they're full of vigour, sometimes they're just about hanging on to life.
Right.
But they are, I mean, they're crucial for our ecosystem.
They
support insects that can't really survive on other things.
No.
So, you know, the presence of these trees is really, really important.
Yeah, fantastic. And fascinating to talk to you about it, because I think, on the face of it, everyone's just, you know, I certainly went, oh my goodness, what have they done to this tree? But actually now understanding a bit more of what they've done and why they've done it is really useful. And, you know, you can, you know, understand the benefits of it.
Yeah, let's go back to, you were asking if this tree was ancient or veteran.
Yes.
So let's start on the ancient bits. So you can't put a number on ancient because it changes between species. So, for example, the definition of ancient will be a tree that is old in relation to its own species.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So a silver birch tree, not very long lived, so 150 years, would certainly be probably a veteran, certainly okay. An ancient tree. If we're onto oaks, then we're at about 400 years, and if we're onto yew, then we're looking at 800 years.
Right.
So it changes between species.
Yes.
The horse chestnuts are not very long-lived. By the time they're at 200 to 220 years old, they are really generally either torn apart by wind or they're invaded with fungi that has, you know, overcome them. There are some examples of very heavily pollarded and with a real history of pollarding that will sort of push beyond that limit.
Sure.
But this tree is some way off being ancient.
Yes.
It has the capacity to become a veteran because, as we mentioned, this crack is only going to decay more, and
yes.
that will become an amazing habitat for bats and wood-boring insects and so on. And there'll be cavities up in the stem forming as well, where hopefully woodpeckers and owls will start
doing their thing,
start getting into
it. What do you, I'm not going to hold you to it, but what do you think its chances of survival are, Matt?
I'm afraid it is a 50-50 on
really?
This. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
No better than that.
No. If the tree had been reduced in, say, four stages over 30 years, so say every 7 years it had had a 20 to 25% reduction, and over 30 years had come down to the size that we're looking at now, rather than carrying it out in one operation, then I'd say, really good chance of survival. If we were looking at a different species, if we were looking at willow or looking at lime or poplar, I'd say without a doubt this is going to come back.
Burst back into life with a lot of vigour.
And with this horse chestnut, if we look at the size of these brackets that we've got here, that does give us an indication of how much mycelium is going on inside the stem, how much it's decaying the heartwood. And that's all affecting the vigour and vitality of the tree.
Which will in turn affect those dormant buds coming back to life. Well, not back to life, but affect those dormant buds
being activated.
Being activated,
That's right.
Okay.
And dormant buds activate very readily off young wood.
Sure.
But we're not. We've got wood that's nearly as old as the tree. So we're asking a lot of it. But it's... What I would expect to see is I'd expect to see maybe 60% of the branches throwing out some growth and having a go, and some of them putting out nothing at all.
And what would you do then? Those branches that have thrown nothing, take them out?
No.
Would you not?
No, I'd leave them.
Okay.
They're your future, that's your future habitat.
Okay, that's part of the ancient, back to the ancient tree.
They'll be the cavities that help it become a veteran tree. Once you've got dead limbs in a tree, the insects love to live beneath it, the woodpeckers love to peck at it, the bats and any small birds like to take advantage of the cavities and so on. And that's when it becomes really interesting. The problem you have here is the balance between safety of the public.
Of course.
It's always that balance between people and trees. And of course, in some areas, you just say, well, the public don't belong here. Just leave them out. Leave the trees to do their thing.
Yes.
It's great. But
this
is not the location.
No, absolutely not.
It'll be interesting to see what happens, and it will be wonderful if it responds well. And we'll know, probably the end of this year will be too early to tell.
Because I was going to say, are we looking at this summer?
It'll be the end of next summer when we can really see whether second year growth has got enough vitality to do what it needs to do.
Well, watch this space.
Watch this space indeed. A question I'm always asked is... how old a tree is. How do I tell how old a tree is?
Okay.
And
without cutting it down, surely.
Without cutting it down. That's where the dark art lies. And the short answer is you can't, because there's too many different parameters, as in primarily what soil the tree is growing on. That can really affect the growth rate of a tree. But the thing with pollarded trees is once you start pollarding them, don't forget that farmers have been pollarding trees for their livestock. Farmers have been pollarding trees for many, many hundreds of years.
Okay.
So the fresh growth provides good forage for cattle.
Yeah, yeah.
And the reason that it was done off the ground is so that the cattle couldn't reach that new growth.
Yeah.
Which is essentially the difference between pollarding and coppicing.
Right. Okay. Said,
but they're both the same thing. One's done at ground level. One is done
further up
the stem. Once you pollard a tree, it slows down the growth rate of the stem.
Okay.
So often a pollarded tree can be much, much older than we think it is. plants because the growth rate is so slow.
Right, that's interesting.
The other thing to mention is that not all species can be pollarded.
Right.
There are some that just won't take to it at all. So silver birch, beech, and most conifers, you can't pollard.
Right, okay.
Yew is the exception. You can... There's a very long history of pollarding and coppicing yews in this country, mainly because they were used for making bows.
Yes.
Long bows were made from yew often. And then there are some species that just don't take to it very well.
Okay.
And there are some species that absolutely thrive on it and will respond incredibly well to pollarding.
Yeah.
So sometimes every other year you can do it and it won't be phased.
Right, okay. So how do you tell how old a tree is then, without cutting it down?
Anything under 50 years old is fairly straightforward. That is, you can look at the crown. Certainly on conifers, you can look at the growth rate of that and you can measure the stem. That will give you an idea.
Yeah.
Often in this country, you just look at records.
Yes.
Look at planting records.
Yeah, see where
Forestry
stuff was planted.
Commission records.
Yeah.
You know, the Forestry Commission have records going back to 1919. So that's a very cheaty way to find out. I mean, over the years of having to cut down trees, we often look at them before and after and have a guess and then you fell it and see how close you are. And sometimes I'm reasonably close, sometimes I'm way out.
So it's a dark art.
It is a dark art.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
Yeah, there's no unless there are historic records.
Yes. Yeah.
It is very difficult to give an exact age.
Yeah, well, fair enough. Well, Matt, listen, it's been absolutely fascinating talking to you. You know, you're one of life's experts in these wonderful trees that we have in our midst. Thank you so much for your time, and I look forward to meeting you again.
Thanks, Steve. It's been a pleasure.
Steve Amos and friends are growing together at Petersfield's Shine Radio.
Shine, Petersfield. Shine Radio.
Matt, thank you so much for your time. Always a pleasure. You're a good friend of mine. That was super interesting, so thank you for that. So we're here at the allotments. It's a glorious day. Coxie's favourite weather, though. Nice and sunny, but with a northerly wind. That wind is quite cold, isn't it?
Oh, it's so chilly. It is. And what worries me about the northern wind, especially for the orchard, is the fact that it has a clear path right across the field to take out most of the blossom. Some beautiful blossoms.
It's looking lovely down there at the moment, isn't it?
Whereas when we have the southwesterly with its warmth and so forth, first it goes through obviously the downs, and then it's got to sort of jump a few trees that we've got surrounding the allotments and the orchard. So by the time it gets to the trees, it tends not to do any damage at all. But the northerly wind.
It could be quite disastrous. And obviously the weather forecast, you were saying, Anne, you know, you like doing the weather on Shine Radio.
Yes, I'm on Thursdays.
The forecast for tonight is sort of
one degree,
which is close to a frost.
And I think we have that another night this week. I think there's two nights at 1 degree this week.
And I think, you know, as gardeners, we've just got to remember it is still April and we can still have frost into May. You know, I remember a few years ago, do you remember, Coxie, I was planting out my dahlias sort of the second week of May, and Tony said, oh, you shouldn't be doing that. We've got a frost forecast this weekend. I'm like, no, of course we haven't. Sure enough, I got home, checked the weather forecast, and do you remember the tent I built around the dahlia beds?
Massive. It really was. It was like a polytunnel.
It was, wasn't it? We're not allowed polytunnels here, but it was like a polytunnel. And I was so lucky because the end plants actually got caught by the frost and died, but all the ones in the middle were absolutely fine.
We've got a banana plant that we've covered, etc. Should we just be putting them all back in again?
If you could see the face Coxie and I have just pulled, I'd definitely have it back in.
Back in again.
Back in. Banana plants. Oh dear.
Definitely covered.
Everything back
cold.
In again.
Too
oh,
cold
gosh.
For a banana plant.
If you can't get it back in, definitely cover it.
Okay.
Yeah, get some fleece and cover it, because, you know, with that wind and the cold, it's lethal to young, tender plants.
But we were talking earlier about sweet peas, and sweet peas, they're a hardy plant.
Mm.
They look fragile, but you can get those in the ground.
Oh, they're tough as old boots. I planted mine earlier.
I've got some ready to go of those, actually.
Well,
yes.
get them in before they get too leggy.
Mine are looking quite good.
Have you pinched the tops out yet?
Yes, I did.
Fantastic.
Yes.
I hadn't.
I got a bit carried away and did it about four times.
Well, that's fine.
Because every time they looked a bit leggy, I just chopped a bit out the top.
Sorry, the same top you pinched out more than once?
Well, yes. I think that mine apparently are looking a lot better than my sister's.
Oh, well, there you go.
Because they haven't gone leggy, because they just keep reducing in size.
New
tip from a learner. Who knows?
Well, I neglected to pinch mine out before I planted them. So what I've done, I've planted all mine this morning, and as I've gone, I've pinched them out as I planted them. So they should be all right. They're all in their new home, well watered, I need to slug pellet them, actually.
You do?
Yeah.
You do. Yes, we've got plenty of slugs, as we were talking about earlier. But broad beans, if I had the broad beans, now they could go in the ground, because they're quite
they're hardy as well. Yeah.
Plant as well.
What else have you been planting then, Coxie?
Yeah. More carrots.
Yes. Have you?
Carrots? More carrots. Don't ask me what the name is. I can't remember.
Is this with the seed tape?
No.
Oh.
No, this is going back to the old-fashioned method of a little drill.
Oh.
Yeah, and trying to space them out.
Trying being the operative word.
We've done ours that way. I kept saying, I'm holding myself back. I'm not going to put too many in.
I've planted my second and final lot of carrots this morning in the carrot beds. As you know, I do mine slightly different to you guys. They're all in the sand, in the holes done and then filled with a very fine compost. Three seeds per station, as I call it. Covered with a bit of compost, week to 10 days, they should start coming up. Thin them out to one carrot per hole, and away we go. Literally the most expensive carrots in the world, I think.
Well, I've managed to do mine, you know, I've still got my shallots and garlic, obviously. They're the only thing at the moment growing. We've put our carrots in between them because apparently that might help carrot fly.
Well, the allium, yeah,
we'll see.
It probably does.
We'll see.
Might do.
Again, new thing.
Just be careful when you pull the shallots up, though, that you don't disturb the carrots.
Well, let's see what happens.
It's a look of mild panic.
Let's just say the shallots at the moment have been nibbled. I mean, you know, I'm just kind of working around.
If it's not one thing, it's another. The mild panic on your face, Anne, whenever I ask you a question is hilarious.
Going back to your method,
yep.
The pipe you were using was actually taller than you.
I know. Well, it was a bit of pipe.
I must say, I've never seen anything like that with carrots in. I mean, it's like a big, huge water butt.
Well, it's a 55-gallon drum. filled with sand, and then I use the pipe to core out a hole and then backfill, as I say, with this fine compost mixed with a special secret blend of fertilisers, plant drugs, as my girls used to call it. And then, as I say, three seeds per station, and away we go. It's worked for me over the last few years. I've grown some absolute whoppers. If they get to the bottom of those barrels by showtime, I'll be a happy bunny.
So when is showtime?
Late August, generally, sort of start
late
August.
It's a long time to wait and look for them,
yeah,
isn't it?
I know. And that's the jeopardy of growing carrots, you know, especially for the shows, because you can't see what's there. Until you pull the carrot the day before the show, you don't know what you've got.
You're very brave only having three. I mean, I think I might just put a couple more seeds in just to...
three seeds? Well, no, because they will germinate. At least two out of the three will germinate. You know, the law of averages states they will. And to be honest with you, I've got three barrels and that big box with, I think that's got 15 holes in it, and the barrels have got six holes each. So what's that, 18? About 30-odd long carrots, and then I've probably got a bit more of the shorter carrots as well. So the long carrots I'm growing are from Medwin Williams up on Anglesey, his own reselected variety. And then, as we talked about the other day, Coxie and I are both growing a variety called Sweet Candle.
Sweet Candle.
Which is...
Make a note.
Anne's furiously going to write that down. What you're growing?
I have got Sugar Snacks.
Okay.
With an X on the end.
Sugar Snacks. Never heard of it.
That was from that was from our brochure.
Okay.
Yeah. From King Seeds. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I think we picked it because you could either eat them as younger carrots or older ones.
Okay.
So,
fair enough.
I think they're resilient, etc. So,
are they up yet?
We only put them in this week.
So. Okay, not yet then. No. We'll watch the space for that.
I will report back on my sugar snacks.
You should. I was just thinking, Mr. Chairman, in terms of, you do have a slight challenge or issue this year.
What's that?
I believe you need to use a waterer at certain times during the summer. Is that not right?
Yes, Coxie. We know what happened last time. The inaugural pumpkin competition, where I asked my dear friend and long-suffering allotment neighbour to water my pumpkin plants for me.
Did you forget?
I did not forget. Maybe I didn't use quite enough water.
Well, it was quite interesting,
Anne. Were you in competition against each other?
Of course we were. Of course. And it's quite interesting, because when I went away, Anne, the pumpkins were about, I don't know, a foot in diameter.
I've got a feeling this is a very bad story.
Well, when I came back, they were still a foot in diameter. Coxie's had grown exponentially in the time that I was away. It was a bit weird. So, you know, not that I distrust my dear friend at all, but when it comes to watering, do you know what, mate? I'm asking somebody else.
I don't want the guilt if something goes wrong to your prize pumpkins.
No.
It's the carrots. He'd be more than upset with the carrots.
I have a short list of people I'm going to ask. And, you know,
neither of us are on it.
Sorry, guys, but no.
I'm okay with that. Are you okay with that?
I'm disappointed.
I'm not.
Yeah, Coxie will mix a very weak blend of glyphosate or something like that with the water to make sure my plants grow really well. Yeah, I know your game, Coxie. Yesterday, Coxie, we were up here. I was busy rotivating, and Stephen from Shine Radio came up with all the gear. We had laptops, we had microphones, I had headphones, and we were doing the draw for the BBC Gardeners World Spring Fair. It was a bit of fun, wasn't it?
It was very exciting.
Yep.
The one disappointment was that when we got to the crunch of trying to phone the winner...
Yes. Well, no one answered the phone, did they?
No one answered the phone.
Well, people are suspicious these days, aren't they? If they see an unknown number come through, you know, generally people let it go to voicemail, don't they? But luckily, we had some people pick up, and they seemed very excited and looking forward to going. We're down here at the Adhurst Estate Allotments with me and my long-suffering neighbour, Coxie, and the whole crew from Shine Radio, actually, because it's a very exciting day. We're doing the draw for the BBC Gardeners World Spring Fair competition that we've been running. And you wouldn't believe how many entries we've had. Overrun, I think, is the best way to put it. So Coxie and I are going to do this draw. Coxie, are you suitably ready to do this draw?
Suitably ready, Mr. Chairman.
Excellent. Do you want to draw the first number?
The first one.
Here we go, drum roll please. And the first number is 110. And that lucky winner is Caroline Matthews. And is that Kaz Matthews from the Petersfield Infant School? Who knows? I think so. Well done, Kaz. Hopefully we'll be giving you a call shortly. And the next number to be drawn out, Coxie, let's go for it. Drum roll please.
This is so exciting. I've never done this before.
Oh, 111. Jess Port. Congratulations, Jess. We'll be giving you a call shortly. And the final number is, I'm going to give this one a go, 102. And Stephen Jones is our third winner. Congratulations to all three of you. I think we're now, by the power of technology, about to phone everybody.
Hello.
Kaz, good morning. It's Steve Amos from Petersfield Shine Radio. How are you this morning?
I'm really good. How are you, Steve?
I'm very well, thank you. Just to let you know, you are being recorded for radio purposes. Is that okay?
Yeah, I guess so. Go ahead.
Excellent. Well, I've got some really good news. I'm up here at the Adhurst Allotments with my long-suffering neighbour, Coxie, and we've just done the draw for the BBC Gardeners World Spring Fair.
Oh, how exciting. Have I won?
You have won two tickets. Yes, you have.
Oh, that is lovely. My teaching assistant was just telling me she's going into this gardening show. So I started looking it up, and then I only found out about the competition yesterday.
You only found out yesterday? Well, there you go. Late entries. Well done, Kaz. Congratulations.
Late entry, yes. Nice one.
The BBC Gardeners World team will be in touch with your tickets, and it's a pair of tickets for Sunday the 5th of May.
That's fantastic. Thanks so much, Steve.
No problem at all. Congratulations. Cheers. How excited are you about going to the show, Kaz?
I'm more excited having spoken to my TA, who helped me with my little garden in school.
You run the gardening club at the Petersfield Infant School, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I've got a little gang of children who come and help me, and another lady who comes and helps from the community garden, actually. And, I'm trying to work out what I'm doing in the garden, so this might give me some pointers if I go along to this day.
Absolutely. Hopefully get some inspiration.
Yeah, that's the plan. Because I've heard they had some really good food stalls, so, you know, winner.
Well, there you go. Well, listen, have a fantastic day and congratulations again.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for calling.
Congratulations.
Coxie wants to sing, apparently.
Okay, Coxie.
No, we sing. Congratulations, Kaz.
Take care.
So
see you
much.
Soon.
Bye.
Hello.
Hi, is that Stephen?
Speaking.
Stephen, hi. This is Steve Amos from Petersfield Shine Radio.
Oh, hello. I'm very grumpy because I'm expecting it to be one of these robocalls.
Oh, no. It's Sunshine Steve Amos from Petersfield Shine Radio podcast.
All right.
I'm very well, thank you. How are you? Yeah.
And Adhurst Estate Allotments, of course.
Exactly. And we're up there at the moment recording for Petersfield Shine Radio. Coxie and I, we've just done the draw for the BBC Gardeners World Spring Fair competition.
Oh, yeah.
I've got some good news. You are a winner. You've won a pair of tickets.
Excellent. How wonderful.
You sound happy with that, Stephen. Yeah. Have you been before?
No. I just saw it. Or did I hear it on your podcast? I'm not sure. But either way, so I thought, I'll put my name down. Very good. Very pleased.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations. Who are you going to take with you?
I shall take Sarah, my partner.
Excellent. Is she a keen gardener as well?
Yes, she likes her gardening. She hasn't got much of a garden, but she enjoys the allotment.
Fantastic. Well, look, have a brilliant day, and the team from Gardeners World will be in touch with your tickets.
Oh, Marcus, thank you very much.
No problem at all. Nice to speak to you.
Cheers. See you around.
And the third and final winner is Jess Port, who we've tried to get hold of, but unfortunately we can't get through to her, so we will be in touch via email very soon. And I think, Anne, I think you're going as part of Petersfield Shine Radio to go and do some recording there.
Absolutely. So yeah, just trying to work out who's going to go. We were thinking maybe Martin could come as well. We'll work it out, get some interviews down there. Speak with Claire as well if she's there.
What, as a guest?
As a guest.
Well, that'd be good, wouldn't it?
That'd be amazing.
Well, if you can find her, if she's not too busy. Well, exactly.
Yeah, that'd be a very exciting day.
Well, I know Claire had a fantastic day there last year. So if you do go, guys, have a wonderful day.
We'll do our best.
We will report back.
Absolutely. So, Coxie, I was saying I was rotivating yesterday, so all the beds are ready, recovered, get the soil nice and warm, but I've got some gladioli corm in today, first lot, so I'm going to do it in three lots. So I've got two new varieties of gladioli corm. I dug up all my old ones, the show winners.
I dug them
all up, and guess what? They're all for sale on the 4th of May.
I might have to try and see if I can find another little bit room to squeeze one in.
Do you know what? Gladioli, a bit like dahlias, a really old-fashioned plant. Mm. But they're so beautiful.
Mm. Well, they are.
And they're fantastic in a flower arrangement. I know, Anne, you enjoy a bit of flower arranging, don't you?
Well, I'm going to try and grow flowers because absolutely that's what I want to do this year as well, is just always have lovely flowers around the house.
Yep.
And actually, do you remember Helia that we met the other week?
Yeah.
It was her who actually got me into it because we did some flower arranging for a ball and she taught me how to do it. Gosh, it must be about 8 years ago. And so she was one who ignited that joy. And in fact, we do a Christmas candle thing, don't we? Our crafty group. So I do that with Martin's wife, Claire, and we have great fun every Christmas.
Sounds like an excuse for Prosecco, if you ask me.
Maybe.
A few bottles.
Too. Oh, really? Each? Yeah, no
doubt.
At
Martin's house this year.
Yes. Is that news to you, mate?
No. Oh, I suffer once a year.
Oh, yeah. Right, okay.
He normally kindly helps us get home, don't you?
Make sure they get home safe and sound.
So it is obviously getting warmer because the weeds are popping up. And dear Harriet yesterday broke my antique of a hoe. She was using it to chop something, bless her. The right tool for the right job. She snapped off the handle right at the end of the hoe, so I had to burn it out this morning, which I've managed to do. And so the handle's just a couple of inches shorter now, which is fine because I'm only a short guy myself, but I've got that going. Coxie, your shed is full of tools, isn't it?
It is.
You can't really move for tools in your shed, can you?
You can't, that's for sure. And I've probably got four or five hoes when I only need the one, or three or four forks. It seems that over the years I've collected quite a variety of different tools.
So you never find anything. I was looking for the sledgehammer in your shed yesterday. Couldn't find it.
I've still got one of your wheelbarrows and I think one of your rakes. No, I think we might have returned the rake.
Oh, there we go.
He's very helpful to people on the allotment.
Do you know what? It's interesting because Coxie and I, you know, over the years when people have left or moved on, we've collected stuff. Water butts, wheelbarrows and things like that. I'm not sure how many wheelbarrows one man needs, but two men, I think at one stage, I think we had about 12 wheelbarrows between us.
12 wheelbarrows, can't even say the word. And how many water butts? I think we've got about 20.
I need a water butt.
Oh, unlucky.
Well, sorry.
Screwfix have got a good deal on at the moment, Anne.
Actually, we're going to try and do our gutters this week on our lovely new shed that everyone helped us build, because we haven't done that yet. So, yeah.
Well, water collection is so easy, you know, and I think anybody that's got a shed or a greenhouse should have at least one water butt, you know, one on each corner. And what we've done, haven't we, Coxie? We've kind of daisy-chained our water butts together. At the top, drilled a small hole. You know, obviously the first water butt being quite high. Well, you can see the bit of daisy-chaining going on there. Hole drilled at the top, bit of hose pipe into the next one, and then a hole drilled, and then the next one, and the next one, and the next one. Hence, all these water butts here are all daisy chained together. So, Coxie, we're looking at what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, about 11 water butts all daisy chained together.
Okay, guys, I just need to get one at the moment. Yeah, we discovered that as we planted all our stuff the other day. We were like, obviously, being on a new allotment, we went, there's no water.
Yeah. Well, you're not too far from a tap.
Did you say they're about to be switched on? Or
they are on.
They are.
The water is on. Yeah.
I'll go and water our things because we have planted quite a few things now. We've done our fruit cage as well.
With this wind, it dries things out. I don't know, we're having loads of rain and the ground is still quite damp, but it's important to keep those seedlings well watered.
But going back to your hoe.
Yes.
I'm thinking for you.
Yep.
What is the most important tool in the shed?
Well, I think the hoe. if I'm honest.
I'd agree with that.
The old saying, isn't it? Hoe when you don't see any weeds, and you won't see any weeds. And it's so easy to do. You just walk around the beds, just take the heads off. You know, if you don't see any weeds, just really lightly going over the surface with a sharp hoe. And it's important to keep the blade of the hoe sharp. You know, so many people just think it's there, but it actually, you need to use it as a knife, so it cleanly cuts the heads of the seeds off.
And of course, using a hoe takes a lot less time than using a trowel or a small little spade in terms of digging up the weeds.
Absolutely. You know, you're absolutely right. But you know, you can get those small onion hoes. Ideal, the blade's about 2 inches wide. When you've planted everything, you can just go in between.
When you say it's cutting it,
yeah,
but surely you need to not just cut it, you're digging out the...
Yeah, we keep cutting it, it just weakens the plant and then they stop growing.
So you don't try and just dig out the roots?
Well, you can do, obviously. Okay. You can do. And if you've got established perennial weeds, absolutely dig them out. There's no point just cutting the heads off an established perennial weed. You've got to...
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking.
No.
I've always thinking in my head, dig out a weed.
Absolutely.
You're saying cutting it is okay.
When they're just, you know, an inch high, take the heads off, and it just weakens them and they'll stop growing eventually.
Yeah, just keep doing it.
There's an interesting tool that my predecessor, David Petchie, used to use, which was called a SWO, which you can use forwards and backwards. Great bit of kit, actually. Almost like a flat golf stick. A flat golf club, and that you can pull backwards and forwards, and works really well.
Yes,
he used to swear by that.
He did, very much so.
Yep.
So, Anne, tell us, what tools have you acquired?
Well, being a new allotment person, obviously, I'm still in the phase of borrowing your tools, Martin. So, but for Christmas, I did get a very nice fork and quite a light one, which is nice because otherwise it's a bit heavy.
Yep.
And so far, that's what I've been doing. I've been doing a lot of digging. A lot of digging, because I'm still at that stage of digging and moving earth.
Fair enough. Anyway, on that note, I think we need to get back to our digging, our hoeing, our rotivating, our planting. Coxie, any final words?
Just enjoy yourselves, especially this time of year when it's so exciting with so many different plants to go for and to get in the ground and then to see them come up during the summer. It's just wonderful.
Excellent. Anne?
I think I need to be patient because I'm really, really excited about just planting everything at the moment, and I've got to hold myself back. And
that's absolutely the key. You know, don't be in a rush to get everything planted.
I just keep holding myself back because I want to do everything. But at the moment, my potatoes are in, so that was great fun.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for listening. And if you want to get in contact with us, please do so at shineradio.uk. Happy gardening.
Growing Together is new twice a month and supported by DeMello & Company. Financial advice for you, your family and your future. Get the latest editions of Growing Together at any time at shineradio.uk.
Now you can see inside Shine Radio.
Our interactive evening in Petersfield will put Shine Radio listeners behind the mic.
Give you the chance to make the news.
Here's the news.
Literally.
And let you turn the tables.
On our turntables.
It's free and backed by the Mayor of Petersfield.
So don't just listen to Shine Radio. Have a go.
Have a go at radio. Saturday the 27th of April from 5 p.m. in the Festival Hall Rose Room. Full details at shineradio.uk.